May it please the Court. Good morning, Your Honors. For almost 15 years, La Bella Winnetka was a family-run restaurant in the village of Winnetka, operating out of four locales within that restaurant space, two dining rooms, one outdoor al fresco restaurant, and a tent area. And it operated within 100 feet of the village of Winnetka. And it continued to operate successfully and with delicious food until February 28, 2007, when a chain of events began with the requirement by the village of Winnetka that roof above its east dining room be repaired, and that a lone roofer went on that roof with a blowtorch and hot tar and was seen by one member of the family, the maitre d' of the restaurant, who walked east about 85 steps to the village of Winnetka and advised the building manager or the building code person that there was work being done on the roof that had not been permitted, was not under code, and caused a serious threat to the health and welfare of not only the building and the restaurant occupants, but the building residents that lived in a number of apartments above the restaurant space. The village of Winnetka did nothing. It didn't inspect it, even though it was asked to inspect the work to make sure that it was consistent with the village codes. And it didn't stop the work and make sure that a lone roofer operating in that space was operating consistent with the law. Remarkably, less than 3 hours after Mr. DiGiulio arrived at the village, the restaurant roof burned, causing damage to the landlord's roof and some repairable damage to the east dining room of the restaurant. But the restaurant had a west dining room, which was small and intimate. It was connected by a hallway. It had a kitchen that was unaffected by the fire. And the bathroom space, which was used for the La Bella restaurant, was also the same bathroom space used by an adjacent property called the Corner Cooks. La Bella asked to reopen, put in a partition so it could use the undamaged space, and it was denied. The Corner Cooks asked to reopen immediately in the same building under the same roofs. It was allowed to do so, and then ultimately through a series of events where La Bella basically was run out of business, the Corner Cooks took over the very space that La Bella had sought to reuse in order to stay afloat, continue to earn the sole basis of the money, and it was denied that opportunity. So it filed a lawsuit, which was dismissed by the district court on the grounds that it failed to state a claim under a class of one equal protection claim. And we are here asking this court to reverse the district court's decision dismissing the amended complaint based upon all of the documents on the ground that there was no class of one adequately stated. And we submit that the documents and allegations created a pause, certainly at the very least, a plausible argument that a class of one had been stated and that should the discovery proceed,
What did you allege in your complaint about the motive for this unequal treatment?
Your Honor, we alleged a personal animus towards this restaurant and its principals, an animus that existed for a substantial period of time, and we've alleged that there was no rational reason why we were not allowed.
What is the basis of the animus?
Your Honor, the basis of the animus can only be speculative at this point, but we have a history of adverse conduct directed at Mr. George DiGiulio, the nature of the diverse group of people that come to the village of Winnetka from all sorts of different places, and that the restaurant owners were not particularly favored by the city manager or village manager, Doug Williams. We've alleged that there is a pattern and practice regarding...
Why doesn't he like the restaurant and its owner?
Your Honor, I can't say with certainty. I wanted to take his deposition. We have not been allowed, obviously, to do that. But I would suggest that there is
But you did allege in your complaint that there was hostility toward your client.
There is indeed, Your Honor.
Is that just manifested by the way they behaved in this case, or is there other...
Your Honor, I think in the 12 minutes that I have in this courtroom, I could not begin to go through all of the ways in which this kind of disparate treatment has been manifested. I can tell you that in one example, when the maitre d', one of the owners of the restaurant, Mr. George DiGiulio, had a broken ankle and was sitting on a sidewalk handing out menus to guests, that a individual in the village was called back to write a criminal ticket for obstructing a sidewalk, which required a criminal trial brought as a result of that conduct, because the village has an ordinance which says you can't do things on the sidewalk. And what was there was a card table with menus, Mr. DiGiulio with crutches and a cast.
That's a treatment. It was probably not a criminal case.
Actually, it was brought as a criminal action under misdemeanor statute, Your Honor.
In state court?
In state court.
For an ordinance violation?
A criminal violation, yes, Your Honor.
Downtown?
No, it was in the case was tried in Skokie in District 2, up in the suburbs west of Old Orchard.
That's a state court?
It is a state court, Your Honor. It just has limited civil jurisdiction and adheres criminal cases.
Ordinance violations in Illinois are criminal offenses.
Well, there are some violations, yes, Your Honor. I tried it, so that's all I can tell you, was that it was punishable by a fine and up to 90 days in jail.
Was he convicted?
No, sir.
Wow.
I don't know whether you want us to consider that business interruption, but are there other instances that you feel discovery would evidence a business interruption other than the events of subsequent to the fire?
Your Honor, I think that the discovery would have disclosed an entire history of disparate treatment, including the fact that it took several years of complaints to the village to have the landlord fix a roof. Finally, when the landlord was fixing the roof, because the village finally went ahead and did it and said, you have to fix it because now it's endangering other people. It's not just leaking in La Bella Winnetka. The landlord provided a lone roofer with no experience with a torch and hot tar. And when it was called to the village's attention, the village didn't look out the window. It said it would not inspect to make sure the codes were being complied with, and it wouldn't stop the work.
No, I appreciate the circumstances surrounding what you've described, but I thought you led out with a suggestion this had been a successful business operation for a number of years in the suburb.
I did say that, Your Honor, and I can't recount to the court standing here each and every one of the various incidents that occurred which resulted in various disparate treatment, including the way in which the corner cook's exhaust system exists, the fact that LaBella went to a village township town hall meeting with the trustees to complain about that, and the village immediately went into executive session, thereby precluding us from either speaking or gaining the information. Do I think, with access to discovery, that all of the things that were set forth in the complaint were not only plausible, but provable to a finder of fact, whether it be the bench or a jury? Absolutely. All we asked Judge Kendall to do was let us take some discovery. We certainly pled a case which, on its fact, if those allegations were true or half were true, would have been sufficient to have a trier of fact conclude that there was an unequal enforcement of the statutes. They took away our liquor license without any process. It just disappeared because what happened in the chain of events, and I can't tell you or think of a more unjust series of events. This is the scenario. Fire on February 28th after the village finally gets somebody started on the roof, followed by a requirement that we can't open the restaurant until the landlord fixes the roof. The landlord's carrier says it's too expensive, so the landlord doesn't fix the roof. 60 days later, the landlord sends a notice saying, we're exercising our right under the lease to terminate you, Labella, because the roof hasn't been repaired, even though it was their agent that started it, and even though they were supposed to fix it.
This sounds like a dispute with the landlord.
Well, it doesn't, because everything that was done, Your Honor, emanates from the refusal of the village to let Labella reopen in undamaged space. And that's
your
the basis.
Your lease was expired or terminated.
Well,
by
it wouldn't have been terminated.
Fire damage not being repaired.
If we were we had a longer lease.
I thought the terms of the lease called for a termination 60 days after a fire.
We would have been able to operate the restaurant, generate money, pay the bills, had the landlord, had the village allowed us to simply reopen in undamaged space.
But your lease was terminated.
It would not have been terminated if we were operating the premises and if we had paid the rent.
I'm sorry. How could you terminate, or how could you operate on the premises if your lease terminated of the fire?
They didn't terminate. I'm sorry, Your Honor. They didn't terminate or attempt to terminate the lease until 120 days after. They sent a notice, but then they wanted to negotiate a new lease. We had no money to operate. We had no money to file a lawsuit. And interestingly enough, there is an adjacent business called the Corner Cooks. Now, the Corner Cooks asked to reopen immediately after the fire and was granted. That request was granted. The Corner Cooks, as a restaurant, which is adjacent in the same building, uses the same roof as the undamaged roof. They have to use the bathrooms in our space, our lease space. That was okay with the village when we asked to partition in the same fashion so that we could operate and receive money. The village said, no, you can't do that. When we asked the village to permit us to repair our damaged space within the main East restaurant, the village said, you cannot do that until the landlord repairs the entire roof. So we're in this incredible catch-22 where everybody is saying you can't do anything, and it all emanates from the village simply taking the position that we can't go forward. But in any event, those are all factual issues which were pled, which the district judge simply ignored and attempted to differentiate between similarly situated by simply saying there was a fire in Labella and there was no fire at Corner Cooks. But the affidavit, and it's in the appendix at pages 93 and 94, you will look at the declaration from the building architect, which is an unchallenged factual statement of the events. And at appendix page 94 is a schematic of the very building. And if you look at it, Your Honors, you will see the Corner Cook space. You will see how the restroom facilities are shared. And you will see that the room, the west dining room, if you will, where it has the small bar, could have been operated. We could have stayed in business with money, paid the rent, and not had this parade of horribles. But in any event, certainly the chain of events initiated by the village.
You were going to say something about rescinding their liquor license?
Yes, sir. We had a liquor license.
Separate from the fire, or is it all...
No, it was separate. The liquor license has nothing to do with a fire. It is simply a license which allowed us as a business to sell liquor in Winnetka. It had time to run, and the village simply rescinded that license without notice, without hearing, without any opportunity. It was only discovered, as alleged, when we looked at a report, a table issued from the village in which they said there were the same number of licenses as there were restaurants. They listed the restaurants, and we were not listed, and we don't have a permit. So they took away our license.
This wasn't pleaded as a license revocation case. The license simply wasn't renewed because you didn't reapply for it? Is that right? I read the complaint as alleging that you weren't sent the forms to reapply.
Well, that's right. The practice that had been involved was not followed. And historically...
Well, that's not actionable as a constitutional
claim. I disagree. I think it's part and parcel, Your Honor, of an animus that exists for no rational reason.
You had a constitutional right to have the village send you the forms to reply?
I think that we were entitled to rely upon the due process and the procedures which existed historically.
Are you saying that because you didn't receive the application form, you didn't know that your license was expiring, or...?
No, Your Honor, what I'm suggesting to you is that the timing and the process of our historic involvement with the license position was not followed. Not that we didn't file it. We filed it ultimately, and we did what we were supposed to do, but the revocation occurred a month before our renewal was required, so we had no opportunity.
Well, was it actually a revocation or just an expiration? Or a non-renewal because there was no application to renew.
If you do it a month before it expires, I would call it a revocation. So
there was some sort of a notice sent that your license was revoked?
There was no notice that was sent that the license was revoked.
Okay.
What was sent was a document from which we were able to determine that we no longer had the license.
What document was that?
It is a village pronouncement.
A village pronouncement.
Right. It was a chapter, a form from the village that's published in the nature of minutes from the Board of Trustees in which actions are taken and certain things are listed. And in that, it was listing all of the licenses for restaurants that were now in effect. And the one that was in effect.
Now, was this received before or after the expiration of your license?
The notice was received before, or I'm sorry, the actual document was received afterwards, I believe.
But I guess what's puzzling, I think Judge Sykes and me, is you knew that there was an expiration date, and as the expiration date drew near and you didn't receive the renewal form, didn't you realize that if you didn't do anything, the license would expire and you'd have to reapply?
Yes, Your Honor, and I believe we did, as the evidence would ultimately show, tried to take steps to rectify that. But you have to put this in the context of everything that was going on. And the most important thing from the restaurant standpoint is that its space not only had a hole in it on one side, but now folks on the other side, the Corner Cooks, were occupying that portion of the property, operating a restaurant that we had under lease, and we had a dispute with the landlord as to whether there was any proper cancellation, and we had no business. So the fact of the matter is, had the village simply stopped the conduct which violated the code when we asked, and they could look out the window and see, there would have been no fire.
Mr. Dickey, if Corner Cooks were not permitted to continue during this period post the fire, would you have a case?
We would not have claim on equal protection.
Yeah. So is it all focused on that vignette period, of the fire?
I think that, Your Honor, is clearly where the focus of the complaint was in the equal protection claim. I think we've raised a substantive due process claim with the license, but
no,
I understand
I
those issues. But the crux of the case lies with the Corner Cooks and another restaurant by the name of O'Neill's that we believe received unequal treatment in the enforcement of the ordinances with respect to building codes and the like.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Dickey.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Clark?
I might start by clarifying the liquor ordinance issue for you, Judge Sykes. Specifically, there were two ordinances. The complaint alleges that this was part of the scheme that Winnetka had to deny them their liquor license and give it to Corner Cooks. But the ordinance that was passed in November of 2007 preserved Labella as on the list of licensees. So it was not motivated. When Corner Cooks got its license, it didn't take away in any way LaBella's. Subsequently, after LaBella had not applied for a license, after it had been closed for about a year, almost just 28 days before it was due to expire, in an ordinance, or rather a resolution dealing with a completely different restaurant, one called Little Lon's, they were omitted from the list of licensees. It's inconsequential, it's unimportant, doesn't matter.
Well, why is it omitted? Is it the village's practice, if the license is in existence but the business isn't operating, to consider it over? Is that what happened, or is this just a ministerial?
It's just a ministerial thing. There's no reason. This is a closed restaurant. The license must.
I appreciate that, Mr. Clark. So I'm just trying to find out your position on why a license which had some period of time to run wasn't listed. Now, and I don't know, the village is how big?
It's 35,000. No, I'm sorry, 23,000.
How many people were in that list? How many?
There's about a dozen.
A dozen. So it's not a lot of liquor licenses in the village, right? So the absence of LaBella is just because someone said, well, they're closed, there's no such listing, they're licensed?
Yeah, well, probably was because it would be rubbing salt in the wound, because they were closed, they were upset. We had already been in a lawsuit here. In other words, they were already suing us about other things. So there would be no reason to put them in and then, you know, gratuitously
drop
it later.
Is it just for that area?
Absolutely.
So it couldn't be used in another section of the village?
It has to be to this licensee at this space, and there's a lot of other requirements. It must be habitable space, restaurantable space, that kind of thing. They didn't come close to qualifying for a liquor permit. That's why it's inconsequential. It's de minimis. It doesn't matter, because it would be just a piece of paper of no consequence.
And the lease had terminated almost a year prior. Isn't that right?
The lease had been terminated on the day, well, according to the complaint, it's alleged that it was terminated as of the fire, that's when the landlord decided he's not going to renew this lease. Because of the fire, the landlord had an option either to repair the property within 60 days, that was the 60-day window, or to terminate the lease. It elected to terminate the lease, and that's something of a game changer for LaBella. When it doesn't have a lease, that distinguishes it.
But Mr. Dickey's argument is that they would have renewed the lease, renegotiated it, what have you, if they had had any income, but that the village was not allowing them to obtain any income because it wasn't giving them the same privilege as corner cooks.
LaBella's allegation, paragraphs 24, 25, and 26, is that the landlord intended at that point to terminate the lease. That's what they allege, that we should have done something about that. That's also their allegation. But first they start with the operative allegation, which is the landlord intended to terminate the lease. They wanted to delay the repair. They were going to delay the repair. They were going to take advantage of the lease.
LaBella could have operated the way Corner Cooks did in diminished space, undamaged by the fire. It would have had revenue, and then might have persuaded the landlord to keep it on as a tenant.
Right, and that's their grievance against the landlord. That's what they say the landlord should have permitted them to do. But the landlord selected another course, which was to terminate the lease. And to let
no, you're not answering me. Their argument is that the landlord would have renegotiated or might have renegotiated the lease if LaBella had income. But you, I mean you personally, the friends of Doug and Doug were conspiring to prevent LaBella from going into business, and this is shown by the fact that they allowed from continuing business, despite the fire, shown by the fact that they allowed Corner Cook to do exactly the same thing.
The allegation is that we made the decision, that the village made the decision to require that the roof be fixed before allowing the restaurant to reopen.
Let's talk about what is the difference in treatment between, what is the basis for the different treatment of Corner Cook versus LaBella?
A significant one, which is that Corner Cooks had the lease. Paragraph 25 of the complaint says that when the new tenant, which is Corner Cooks, came in, they had a lease. They were therefore, at this point, the village was just doing what it needs to do. It's got an applicant with a new lease asking to use the space that was previously used by Corner Cooks. That's what the village does, is approve that permit. The difference is that only LaBella suffered the fire over its roof. Remember, the plans that Mr. Dickey referred to make it clear that there's a one-story roof. That's the one that was burned. And then there's a three-story roof, or a roof over a three-story building. That's the one that contains the bar area, which Mr. Dickey said he should have been allowed to keep. But it was the landlord's decision not to let him use that. It was only the village's decision, a rational decision, to say we aren't going to allow food service in a burned restaurant. Fix the roof first, then reopen. The landlord said, I'm not going to do that.
That the burned roof also extended over Corner Cook's restaurant.
The burned roof did not extend over Corner Cook's restaurant. The burned roof was only LaBella, and that's the schematic that's in the appendix.
What about the shared hallway and restroom area?
The shared hallway and the restroom are in the three-story building, and that makes it...
That's undamaged.
Undamaged, okay. And that's where Mr. Dickey makes it very clear that that's undamaged space, again, which distinguishes it. They've made it clear that one was undamaged, one was damaged.
So the entire space that Corner Cooks occupied was undamaged, and it didn't expand into LaBella's space until after LaBella's lease had been terminated?
Correct.
That situation?
That's correct. The other issue that was raised was the issue of animus and what needs to be alleged for animus. It's a very important case. Judge Flom's case is Flying J. And then there's an issue of what needs to be alleged. What LaBella needs this court to do is something that this court has never done before, which is proceed on the basis of animus alone. They make no attempt to explain the rationality of the decisions. By the way, it's our position that the only thing we're accused of doing here is doing nothing. And in fact, the reply brief complains about doing zero. The roof was burned, and we did nothing. But we had no duty to do anything. Our ordinances specifically say there's no need for a permit for ordinary repairs. There's no need to supervise. We have no business supervising private roofers. After the fire, again, the complaint is that Winnetka did nothing. It didn't intervene on LaBella's side. It didn't do anything to preserve their lease rights. Not our business. That's the complaint. Doing nothing in this case was an exercise of discretion, a rational exercise of discretion, and then we get only after all of those issues do we get to the issue of animus. There's no allegation that there was anything personal here. There's just the conclusion of ill will. There's no suggestion that there was some vindictive action, that there was some reason we were taking this, no retaliation for something that LaBella did. It's just, they think, irrational, but they don't do what they're required to do, which is explain the irrationality, negative the irrationality. They don't try because they want to proceed on animus alone. This court has never done that. It shouldn't do it in this case. I'd like to address briefly the issue of whether this was discretionary conduct. Again, if it's discretionary conduct, everything we're alleged to do here, in this case negatively alleged to, and we did nothing. We're being sued for having done nothing. That was the exercise of discretion. We chose not to require a permit for roofing. We chose not to. That's the exercise of discretion. It's also the exercise of discretion that is consistent with our ordinance. We chose not to supervise the private roofer, the exercise of discretion. We elected to as a matter of judgment, require them to repair the roof before they started serving food. All of those, then we chose not to participate or intervene in the landlord-tenant dispute. Under Enquist, that kind of thing does not come into play, shouldn't be considered a class of one violation. There are strict limits on class of one cases for very good reasons. There's the concern that's been expressed is that we're going to be dealing with every municipal quarrel, and there must be hundreds and thousands of them. There are indeed. This is apparently one of them. But it's not a constitutional violation unless it's something besides the exercise of discretion, something that standards could be measured against. There are standards to measure against, unless the plaintiff can plead and show prima facie identical in all relevant respects to demonstrate similarly situated, so that this is indeed an equal protection case, not just a grievance case. That the decisions we made were irrational. And that's a rather forgiving standard, and it's to be done before discovery. And finally, only then do we get to the issue of animus. And here they've only alleged animus. If there are no further questions.
Just one. Sure. Corner Crooks closed, I assume, after the fire, too. I mean,
the allegation is that they were allowed to immediately reopen.
Reopen, yes.
Yes.
Did they have to get a village permission to reopen?
There's no allegation about that. The allegation only is that they were allowed to immediately reopen. The allegation also is that their space was undamaged.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Clark. Mr. Dickey, your time expired, but you can have another minute if you'd like.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just have a couple of quick points. First, with respect to the point that you made, when the lease was terminated, it is uncontroverted that the landlord also sent a new lease and asked to negotiate. So the point that you raise about continuing in business, being able to pay for it, is right on the money. The landlord intended to renegotiate a lease that was expiring some 9 months into the future. Second, this is not a case just about animus. We believe that the complaint stated a plausible case for similarly situated, and we're suggesting that the allegations were sufficient to establish that there was no reasonably rational reason why LaBella was not permitted to open and the Corner Cooks was entitled to reopen. And with respect to the question regarding where did the Corner Cooks go, it moved into what is called the front dining room and bar area, the same space, the very same space that LaBella wanted to use and was denied the opportunity to do so. And in terms of the discretion they were talking about, while it is true there is no duty to protect, but when there are ordinances, the municipality is not allowed to enforce them in a discriminatory, disparate fashion. And the allegations, we believe, were sufficient to establish, for purposes of pleading, that plausibility. And we would simply ask that the court reverse the denial on the motion to dismiss and send this case back and let us develop a factual record, because this is not a summary judgment case. This is a pleading case. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Counsel.